for years, few people believed these men were innocent, so they stayed locked up. Now, exonerated prisoners paired with famous crime writers tell their stories.
It's not a fantasy. It's nothing made up. These are real people who suffered real pain.
I'm Ari Shapiro, The Anatomy of Innocence, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen today at 4 at KTOO 104.3.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8, Arts at 360 presents a special Alaska Folk Festival edition of its Red Carpet Concert Series, performances by 2016 Folk Fest artists. At 9, Running 2017 continues conversations with Anchorage Assembly candidates. Gavel Alaska is back at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Welcome to the Thursday, March 30th edition of Juneau Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. We've got a great show. We'll start the show, like usual, with a UAS corner. Then we're going to learn about the Maritime Festival that's coming up in May. Another look at the Perseverance Theater, To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a fantastic show going on right now. And then we'll end with Arts Up with Nancy DeTrenny. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An 11-year-old from the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community in Arizona testified before U.S. senators in Washington Wednesday about efforts in his community to combat diabetes. Elton Viega says a diabetes prevention camp taught him how to eat healthy and find ways to enjoy an active lifestyle, which includes sports and playing outside. Elton says diabetes runs in his family, and he wants to be a role model for them and his peers.
I learned that having high sugar and eating junk was not okay, and that if I did that, the problem taught me, like, eating good and exercising, I would lower my sugar and feel better. And I did. I can't wait to go back to camp again this year. I know I will learn more and will have a lot of fun. I think more kids will learn from the diabetes camp, and we can help other people in Salt River be healthier so they won't be sick either.
The fifth grader says the camp helped him lose nearly 16 pounds. Members of the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs are examining risk factors for diabetes among Native young people and seeking ways to address the disease. The camp Elton attends is supported by the Special Diabetes Program for Indians, which is up for reauthorization. This week, a theater in Laramie, Wyoming will offer the first ever performance of the play, What Would Crazy Horse Do? By Lakota playwright Larissa Fast Horse. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, the playwright says it's been hard to get the play produced because it raises controversial questions about racial purity.
What Would Crazy Horse Do is the story of a set of twins, the last two remaining members of a fictitious tribe, who are approached by the Ku Klux Klan to collaborate on preserving racial identity. Fast Horse says she was impressed that Laramie's Relative Theatrics was brave enough to tackle such a controversial topic when for 5 years no other troupe would.
This is such a hugely popular play, and yet so many theater companies have been afraid of doing it. This company, when they contacted me, I was like, you mean Laramie, right? Like, Laramie. I've been to Laramie. Like, you guys want to produce this, and they're doing such a brave, crazy season of work.
Fast Horse says one reason other theaters backed away is because she requests that Native Americans play Native American parts. She says while many theaters resist that, Relative Theatrics director Ann Mason embraced it.
We love it, but we can't cast Native people. And so I always say, we will talk again, and that doesn't mean you can't produce a play, but what I'm going to say is, first, you have to try. You have to really try. Ann, however, was 100% on board with that. Unfortunately, a lot of theaters, I have to really push them to try.
Mason spent 6 months casting the play. Fast Horse says she based the play's story on history. Back in the 1930s, the Ku Klux Klan hosted a powwow in South Dakota. I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
A Native American man is this year's World Elk Calling Champion. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, the talent runs in his family.
The World Elk Calling Championship was in Salt Lake City this month, drawing dozens of people who took their turn before the judges. The winner of the professional division was Brian Langley of McMinnville. He describes his winning bugle.
I just went to Walmart and bought a wiffle ball bat and cut the ends off of it and put a fleece cover over it.
Langley had four children compete as well. His daughter, Mariah, placed first in the peewee division, followed by his son, Gavin.
They were excited. They've been driving their mom nuts for months getting ready for the competition.
A member of the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, Langley says he hunts elk on the reservation or other parts of Oregon.
Even how loud we can be with a bugle really doesn't even compare to a real live elk. I mean, they're pretty intimidating at times, you know, when you got a big bull elk screaming down the back of your neck, make the hair stand up.
The annual contest is sponsored by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. It uses proceeds for its wildlife conservation efforts. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Eugene, Oregon.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting STEM careers since 1990 as a corporate partner of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships. Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon, and it is 42 degrees at the Juneau International Airport. This afternoon, we're looking at scattered showers, chance of precipitation 40%. And then this evening, we're looking at 100% precipitation, low around 42. And then tomorrow, rain near 44, chance of precipitation is 100%. I guess spring has arrived. All right, we're going to kick off the show. We have two guests here. They're both students at UAS, the University of Alaska Southeast, and they're both bilingual. We have Erica Cruz, who is grew up in Juneau, and she's a pre-nursing student at UAS, and we have Mark DeLay, and he grew up in Ketchikan, and he's a health science student at UAS. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank
you.
Okay, let's start with the beginning. So, Erica, how many languages do you speak?
I speak four languages, English, Kapampangan, Tagalog, and a little bit of Spanish.
Okay. And those two in the middle were languages of the Philippines?
Yes.
Okay, great. And what about you, Mark?
I speak four as well. I speak Ilocano, Tagalog, English, and a little bit of Spanish.
Oh,
just
wow.
A tiny bit.
Interesting. So was Spanish your like high school class for both of you?
College class.
Okay.
Yeah, same for me.
All right. All right. So, Erica, you grew up in Juneau, and then you learned these languages how?
I grew up learning these languages around my grandparents and my family mostly. They would speak Kapampangan around us, and that's how I learned it, and I just learned Tagalog by watching soap operas, actually, with my grandma, and so that's how I acquired that language.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to a country and you don't speak the language, a lot of times you're just looking for, like, those keywords, you know, and then mm-hmm. you kind of – soap opera seems the perfect place to do
yeah.
that. Very broad strokes of emotion.
Exactly.
And what about you, Mark? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little place called Damortas, La Union, Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
The main language there is Ilocano, so I learned that first, and then our national language was Tagalog, so I learned that there. And when I moved here when I was 11, back in 2005, I didn't know any English, so I learned English here. And the way I learned English is by watching a lot of movies, you know, listening to music, English songs, and having conversations with classmates and teachers as well.
That sounds right. That's about fourth or fifth grade?
Yes, fifth grade. Yeah.
So you went to one of the schools here?
Yes, I was in Houtling School in Ketchikan.
Uh-huh.
And so that was very nerve-wracking, for sure.
I would imagine. I would imagine. So I'm jealous. I speak one language, and I could mangle a few others, but not really speak fluently. So here you are, you're both college students. How important is it for you to have this understanding of these other languages and a significant different culture?
I definitely think it's important because culture and language kind of go hand in hand. So when you're learning a language, you're also kind of learning the culture with it. And I think it's important to be culturally aware and to be aware that other people may have other perspectives, and just learning from that, I think that's pretty much the main importance of language and learning language.
And what about you, Mark?
From whatever she said, I think it's good to know, definitely, for sure, because you have more, if something comes up that you need to speak the language, you know, you're there, so like you're there understanding the same language, so you're able to communicate between two parties, I guess, trying to communicate.
That sounds great. So let's talk about culture for a second. What do you think, you know, like when you think about American culture, there are some iconic cultural pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to name them because I think they might be different for everyone. Uh-huh. But what are some of the iconic Filipino cultural icons that you could share?
I think family is a huge thing in the Philippines. Family is just, like, super important. Like, family is, I feel like, is something that always comes first, that people teach you to, like, put your family first. Like, blood is thicker than water is kind of, like, the saying my uncle always tells me. And so I think that's a major iconic thing, family.
Yep. Well, from that, I agree with that. Definitely family, laughter, and then religion. Filipinos are pretty big on religion. There's multiple religions in the Philippines, but for me, I was born Catholic, and so I was very into that when I was young, and still am a little bit, but yeah, family, laughter, and religion.
Religion. Okay. And doesn't really sound that far off from, you know, what you would think of these American iconic cultural pieces. But what about dance? So July 4th, there is a fabulous Filipino dance team every 4th of July. Is that an iconic piece, or is that just this group's, you know, because they dance with such passion and joy?
Yeah, I think their group is called the Atien, and they, I think dance is important too, but I think it varies where you're from.
By region?
Yeah, it definitely varies by region because of the different festivals happening there. There's different types of things going on and different celebrations going on in different locations. So I think that's more based off of where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay. And how many languages are spoken in the Philippines?
82 different languages. And they varies from different regions as well. Philippines is divided by, like, three main islands. Top island is Luzon, middle is Visayas, and then the bottom part is called Mindanao. And all three has, what?
They have tons of languages.
Tons of languages. Where I'm from Luzon, it's mainly Ilocano and, like, Tagalog and a whole bunch of languages that I don't know exist.
Yeah, there's a ton of different, like, dialects that just, there's a ton. Like, there's no way anyone knows all of them. Most people actually, families, I feel like my mom, she speaks Kapangbangan, and my dad speaks Ilocano, and then they don't talk to each other in those languages, but we talk to each other in Tagalog, and that's kind of how they communicate. I think Tagalog is more the language, yeah, the national language.
Well, that sounds great. All right, if you're just joining us, we're chatting with two UAS students. Both of them are bilingual. They speak three, four languages, which is great. So, Mark, one last question before you go. So you moved to Southeast when you were 11.
Yes.
Okay. So what was the biggest shock about Alaska for you?
I'd say the weather was a big thing. It was very cold. But I think besides that, it's just like, first of all, when I was 11 when I came to Ketchikan. I was afraid, I guess, to speak to anybody because I did not know any language. Like, I didn't know English, so I wouldn't know how to communicate. I don't know. It was just weird. I guess I was just scared. Scared of the new environment around me.
I could totally get that. You know, you're an elementary school kid, probably upper elementary,
yeah.
And you're just, you know, transplanted to a different place where it's very hard.
Yeah, I was definitely had a lot of hard days.
And Erica, have you visited the Philippines?
Yeah, I have. It's been a while since I've been back there, but I think just keeping up the language is super important for me just because it's a way to, if I go back there, then I have a way to communicate with my family back there. I can communicate with my elders and my other family. I just feel like it's super important to me to keep that language so I can keep that culture and have it still be a part of me.
Okay.
Yeah, and social media has a big part of it, too.
Yeah,
that's how I communicate with my families and friends.
That's great. All right, so as we wrap up, we've run out of time, but can you say goodbye and have a nice day in a couple of those languages or whatever the natural closing would be? I'd love to hear it.
Magandang gabi po sa inyong lahat. Nandito po kami sa Juno Radio, Erica and Joanne and
Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Magandang gabi.
What did you say?
Today I'm here with yourself, Jeff, and Erica and myself. And hopefully you guys are watching and have a good night.
Oh, that's great. Right, you're hired. What about
you? I think Mark pretty much covered that. That was the national language, so I think.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
All right. It was
thanks
great
for
to
having
meet
us.
You. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. It's 17 minutes past the hour. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of Juno Afternoon. I am your Thursday host, Joan Pardis. It is still 42 degrees and probably raining somewhere in Juno. And our next guest is Keith McCoy. He is playing Tom Robinson in Perseverance Theater's production of To Kill a Mockingbird, which I saw on opening night, and which is rather fantastic. So
thank you.
It's one of my favorite Perseverance Theater productions.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I'm glad I'm a part of that. Then.
So you were playing an iconic role. You're playing Tom Robinson.
Yes.
In a very moving and iconic, once again, piece of literature. So is this the first time you're playing the role?
This is my first time playing Tom Robinson. I've done the show before. I played Reverend Sykes, actually, and I understudied Tom Robinson. So coming in, I had, of course, you know, as an artist, I have my own ideas about who Tom is and how I would portray him. So having done it before, I was kind of prepared.
I bet.
Yeah.
So, Keith, you don't live here.
No, I don't live here.
You're a traveling actor?
I am a traveling actor. I've spent the last 17 years on the road working as an actor, an actor, singer, dancer. I do it all. So that's helped to keep me employed for all these years.
So an entertainment speak, that's a triple threat.
Yes.
Know that. Okay, so what do you think about Alaska?
Oh, I love Alaska. This is probably my fifth show. I've been coming back for the last 5 years, at least once a year, here to Juneau to do a show with Perseverance Theater. So it's almost like a second home. And I'm a military kid, so I lived in Anchorage for 3 years as a young boy with my family. And I have a brother who still lives there. So
okay.
Alaska, like I said, is kind of like a second home.
Great. Let's talk about the other roles that you've done at Perseverance.
My first role was Walter Lee in A Raisin in the Sun. That was back in, I believe, 2012, 2013, somewhere around there. I get confused. And then after that, I came back and I did Chicago. I played an MC in Chicago. And most recently, I feel like I'm leaving something out. I'm definitely leaving something out. I can't remember what it is. But last year, I played the judge in Sweeney Todd.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw all those performances.
Yeah.
They're great. Okay, so let's get back to Tom Robertson, To Kill a Mockingbird. So the book was written in the 60s. It's placed in the 1930s.
Yes.
Here we are in 2017. So for you, playing, you know, this, you know, it's tragic, and
yes.
it's and the character of Tom Robinson, oh man, I'm not even going to talk about it. You talk about it. So for you, what is the biggest challenge as an actor playing this type of role, specifically this role?
Yes, well, playing a character like this is all about honesty and portraying them as true to life as possible without making them a caricature, a stereotype, portraying him as a human being. Where, you know, during this time period, that was part of the problem. African-Americans were not seen as just human beings capable of having the same human qualities as everyone else. And so I feel like Tom Robinson being on the stand, you actually get to see a human being who has compassion, who, you know, cares about other people, and trying to do something good for someone else, it kind of backfired on him, but it's because, you know, he's a kind-hearted human being. My approach to Tom, once again, it's about honesty. It's about telling his story. I thought about it quite a bit when I was working on the character. You know, what does he hope to get out of this by, you know, being on the stand? Because there's so many stories like this happening during the time. You have the Scottsboro Boys. You have Rosewood Massacre in, you know, Florida. You have all these different things happening during this time period because of this. And it's an opportunity for Tom to speak his truth and just let his story be told, and telling his story with dignity and grace. And so people see this is a human being that we're killing, not an animal, not some vicious brute. This is a church-going family man who was kind of doing a Christian duty. He saw someone in need, and he lent a hand, and he kind of it backfired on him.
Right, right. And there's a real moving piece in the play where, you know, from the audience, his boss stands up and says, "Hey, I know him."
Yeah.
You know, in a different way. I sounded like Scott there for a second. But, you know, that they just, it was like, I know this man.
Right.
I could vouch for this man. And his voice was like, well, that's not the story we want to hear.
Right.
So Art Roach, the director, just joined us of To Kill a Mockingbird. So we're talking about playing Tom Robinson. Well,
yes.
Keep it.
Oh,
thank you. Thank
exactly.
You. What a way to enter the room.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. This was after I said this was one of my favorite Perseverance Theater productions, bar none. So
thank you,
Art, for bringing it together and directing it, and Keith, for your big contribution to
thank
it.
Thank you.
So let's jump into it. So they say the N-word a lot in this play because it's, you know, as we said, it was written in the 60s, placed in the 30s. And, you know, as an audience member, it's really jarring to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, for you as an actor, how does that feel?
Well, it's true to the period. And as I said before, with pieces like this, you have to be honest. Because if you're not being honest, you're not giving justice, due service to the piece. So you have to be honest to with the time period. As far as the word being used, I think it should be used. You should feel uncomfortable. You should feel at ease. It's a vicious, ugly word. And we need to be reminded of that. And so when you do, I'm happy to hear that you cringe when you hear the word, as you should. It's not something that should be tiptoed around. You can't sugarcoat it. It is what it is. And it should be vicious. It should be harsh. It should make you feel uncomfortable whenever it's said. So with that in mind, I think it should be in the story because it's true to a time period.
Well, it helps create the time and place, mm-hmm. you know, the authenticity. If you said African-American every time they use the N-word in
right.
this play,
it would not make sense.
It would just render so false.
And it goes back to, you know, what I was saying earlier about when you play characters, Tom Robinson is a fictional character, but his situation is a real situation that happened to a lot of black males during that time period. So if you don't use the word, you're not being true to the era, to the time, to the piece. And I think it's slightly disrespectful to not be true to the piece. And like I said, if you're trying to do it so, or if you don't use it because you don't want to offend people, no, you should. People should be upset.
It's not about not offending people.
Exactly, no. You should walk away enlightened in some sense. And, you know, and it just sheds a light on the world back then. And it sheds a light on how the word was just tossed around, you know.
Common vernacular.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's a reminder. People need to be reminded of things every now and then, and I think that's a great reminder.
And I think that's what makes the piece, not that word, but the whole sense and place, the way the team, the production team, has really recreated the time and the sense of place, that I felt that the piece was really everything I want from a theater piece, that it was intimate, but it was also universal, that mm-hmm. that I felt it was really moving, that I was in that place. I was watching it like the jury members of just watching this travesty of justice.
Yeah.
So Art, for you, directing, Art Roach is the artistic director of Perseverance Theater, and he's also the director of this particular play. So when you approach an iconic piece like this, where do you begin?
Trying to meet some expectations because it's so well known. So certainly want to do something that will give people, when they come away from it, a chance to say, yeah, I saw Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing is asking, you know, why now? Why here and why now? And the conversation of our time, I think, as Americans is about race, as we're seeing demographic change in the country overall. And so this is a chance to remind us of our origin story, good and bad, and think about that as we're talking about, you know, a world where we're going to be majority non-white in most places within 10 years.
Right, right. And it already, you know, we're not even going to go there. We're going to stay on the theater. We're going to stay right here on the theater. So you have how many more weekends left?
We close on April 15th, so the math on that is 3 more weekends, right?
Yes.
And there are seats available this weekend, but it's filling up pretty fast. So it'd be a good idea to look at the following 2 weekends for good seats, which are still available. But it seems to be filling up the week of the show.
Okay, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. So before I let you go, I want to go back to Keith, who's playing Tom Robinson. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Art Roach and Keith McCoy of To Kill a Mockingbird at Perseverance. There's a couple more weekends. Get your tickets at the usual places and at the theater. So now that you've played Tom Robinson, you said it was one of those roles that you understudied, you've been in the play.
Mm-hmm.
The world was your oyster and you could pick the role, what's the role that you really want to play?
Oh, the role that I really want to play. it would probably be Mufasa in The Lion King. That's one of the roles. Yeah, that would be one of the roles for me. I know everyone's like, he didn't say a Shakespeare piece. He didn't say Othello. He didn't. No. I let my heart lead the way, and that's where my heart leads me, you know. And so I would love to play that role. I mean, and it's, you know, some people might look at it and say, oh, it's Disney, it's fluff. But it's like, no, this is a man who has dignity. This is a man who instills core values in his son, and he lives by these things. It's, you know, he's a great leader. And And so I think, you know, looking at all those qualities and, you know, just the peace within itself, that's one of those roles that I really, really, really want to play. Wow. And there are others as well, but like, if I had to pick one, that sits at the top of my list.
That's the one. That's the one that's here and now.
Yes.
That sounds great. Well, Art, can you do something about that?
I would love to see you do that.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do for the community, both of you.
Thank you.
Repeated roles and everything you do at Perseverance, and for this production in particular. So, To Kill a Mockingbird, check it out if you can. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 30th of March, 2017. It's the birthday of Anna Sewell, born in Yarmouth, England, 1820, author of Black Beauty, the autobiography of a horse, narrated by the horse himself. It's the birthday of the playwright Sean O'Casey, born in Dublin, 1880, author of many plays, including The Shadow of a Gunman, story of a poor poet mistaken for an Irish Republican Army fighter who decides to go along with it since it's getting him some attention from a pretty woman. It was part of his Dublin trilogy, which included Juno and the Paycock and The Plow and the Stars. It's the birthday of the man who said, to do good work, one must eat well, be well housed, have one's fling from time to time, smoke one's pipe, and drink one's coffee in peace. Vincent van Gogh, born in Groot Zundert, Holland, in 1853. Never had any formal training in art. He taught himself to draw, moved to Paris, then to the south of France, began painting sunflowers, committed himself to an asylum. 1888, he suffered from manic depression, but he was working at an incredible pace during all this time, made his famous painting Starry Night. 2 years later, he left the asylum. He was still painting at a frenetic pace, turning out a painting almost daily. And one July afternoon, 1890, he shot himself, dying of the wound 2 days later. And it was on this day in 1858, Hyman Lippmann of Philadelphia patented the first pencil with an attached eraser, the common yellow pencil, hexagon-shaped to keep them from rolling off the table. A single pencil can draw a line 35 miles long, write about 45,000 words. John Steinbeck loved pencils, started every day with 24 freshly sharpened ones, and used 60 pencils a day to write The Grapes of Wrath. Here's a poem by David Hecker, Hitchhiking. The only time I ever hitchhiked, my thumb attracted the driver of a 16-wheeler. He said he needed company to stay awake, been on the road for 18 hours, hauling a huge caterpillar on the back of his rig. I was headed to my hometown, 100 miles away, to visit friends, cruise familiar streets, and dance to rock and roll. Nodding his head for me to climb in, he reached for second gear, then slumped forward onto the steering wheel. Panicked he might be dead, I shouted and shook his shoulder fiercely. In one smooth move, he woke, stopped the truck, and asked, "Do you know how to drive?" I said I'd driven grain trucks on farms. We exchanged places, and he told me to double clutch between forward gears. Then he fell asleep. When I reached 40 miles per hour, the road looked narrow like a path on the prairies, and the speed seemed like 60. The first town I entered, and the only one I would pass through with a stoplight, I tried to slow, but I didn't think to double clutch down through the gears. Thank goodness it was dinner time, and few drivers were on the main street. The next stop was my hometown. I managed to halt the truck on the outskirts. The driver awakened and thanked me. I was still shaking as I climbed out of the truck and stepped down onto the safety of solid ground. Hitchhiking, poem by David Hecker from Natural Affinities, published by Moonpath Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tuning in and listening to KTOO, even though I'm so far away from home, is one of my favorite ways to stay connected to home. My name is Nicole Hollingstead. I work as the Director of Operations for the National Congress of American Indians, and I've been listening to KTOO for over 15 years. I moved to Washington, D.C. in 2015, and living in the nation's capital, you're surrounded by news sources. But I still turn to KTOO because I know it's the most trusted news source that is going to give me stories about home that I know I can rely on. I think particularly in this current environment, we need to feel like we can trust our news and that what we're learning and hearing is going to be reliable. And that's why I turned to KTOO. Membership is critical to keeping public radio alive.
Renew or start your membership at ktoo.org.
It is 3:35 p.m., 25 minutes to the hour. It's 42 degrees. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It is the Thursday, March 30th edition, and it is 42 degrees and raining, Thursday, March 30th. Jeff Brown is at the board. Joan Part is here. I am your Thursday host. And in the studio with us is Dana Herndon. She is the communications manager for the Juno Economic Development Council, and she's here to talk about the Maritime Fest.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Dana. So the Maritime Fest, that's in its, like, what, eighth year?
Eighth year, and we're doing it again. It's a really fun event. The JADC started producing it to really celebrate the maritime industry and to highlight it because it brings a lot of jobs to our community and a lot of people make their livelihood from it. So we want to celebrate that. So eighth year in a row, and it's super fun. We've had, despite all the weather, it's always been, it's historically been like raining and kind of windy, but people still come out in full force and it's been so great. So this year we're hoping for some sunshine, but you know, it happens either way.
That's
so,
it. Rain or shine. And it's May 6th. So for people who haven't been to the Maritime Fest, tell us, I know it happens well at Marine Park, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a twist.
Ah.
So this year, we might be doing it at the new Alaska Steamship Dock. So it's going to be brand new. I think it's opening the day before the Maritime Festival on May 6th. So if the weather is right, if it's not super windy, the whole festival is going to be taking place on the dock, on Alaska Steamship Dock.
Okay.
So it's going to be, and the Marine Park would be used for parking.
Oh,
so
yeah. That's great.
Yeah, so Plan B, that's weather permitting. Plan B would be to do it at Marine Park and Plaza, where it's been every year. So
right, cool. They've been working on it all winter. It'll be great too. That's a great draw for people to come and say, "Hey,
so
what
excited.
Is this?" You know, before the big ships come.
We did a walkthrough today with Docks and Harbor, and it's so amazing how big the space is. So it'd be really cool to have the community come and check it out for themselves.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
So what happens at the Maritime Fest? You have different booths. You have some food.
Yeah, we have all of that. It starts with One People Canoe Society. We have the ceremonial start, and they canoe over from Douglas to downtown. They're going to be letting off at the Wings Dock this year. And so that's where we start. And then we have dancers go through the festival grounds, and that's our ceremonial start. So it's really special. It's a really great way to just start this energetic festival. And then we have hundreds of pounds of seafood that's generously donated by Taku Smokeries and Alaska Glacier Seafoods, and we grill that up, and we just give that out for free. And then we have tons of other food booths and vendor booths. We try to keep it maritime themed, so we have a lot of artists and a lot of informational booths. We do a fillet contest. Taku Smokeries will bring out their, like, fillet guys, and they do this contest which draws a ton of people, so that's really cool. Our Coast Guard partners do a search and rescue demo, so they have, like, a helicopter fly by, and then they have, like, one of their Coast Guard boat vessels there. Southeast Sailing Club is going to be doing a regatta, so that's happening in the middle of the festival, too. We have tons of kid activities. Sometimes we have boat making, sometimes we have coloring. Kind of just depends on what's going on.
Submersibles, you have submersibles for
them. Exactly. We do live music, so this year we're calling it Doc Jams. So we have a lineup. We have Juno Soul, we have Annie Bartholomew, we have Mia Wade. So that's our lineup this year. It's going to be really fun. And also a twist, we do tug of war every year. So JPD won last year, and they have to defend their title. So we do tug of war on the dock, but this year we're doing a twist. This is something we've been thinking about, is doing a canoe tug of war. So it happens, the finalists have to compete on the water.
How fun!
So yeah, so we have so much. We have a beer garden, and we have taku tote races. So there's so much going on, and we hope everyone comes out and at least just come and walk through the area.
That sounds great. So if people want to find out more information, do you have a social media presence?
Yeah, we have Facebook, the Juno Maritime Festival Facebook page. So definitely go on there, and we constantly update it with more information. And then we have a website, which is jedc.org/Maritime Festival.
Great. And so the night before the Maritime Fest, what goes on?
So that is the way we pay for this festival is to do the Port to Starboard Progressive Dinner. This is the fourth year that we've been doing it. It's really popular and really fun, and we go to three different spots. So this year we'll be doing a tour of a Coast Guard vessel, and then we'll be going to the buoy deck, and then we'll be going to the NOAA subport. So it's going to be like this cool warehouse dinner party. And we have delicious seafood at all three. Well, it's going to be two spots. And then we have three free cocktails with the tickets. Port Chocolate is one of our partners, so they're going to be providing some great vodka and gin and bourbon. And so three free tickets, drink tickets come with the
excellent
the ticket.
So how much are those tickets and how do you get them? Because that's probably limited, right?
Yes, that's definitely limited. So get your tickets when you can. It's $95 per person, and that includes a lot of delicious seafood and three alcoholic beverages and a historical tour and, passage to these three kind of exclusive places, and then it's $1,500 for a table of 10. And tickets can be purchased on the Juno, on the Maritime Festival website, so jedc.org/Maritime Festival.
All right, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
So if you want to go out with some friends, grab one of those $1,500 tables, and there you go.
And then we pay for the festival. It's
okay, exactly. Maybe you'll even get an extra drink ticket.
Yeah, totally.
So before I let you go, I know that Juno Economic Development Council partners with so many people to make these things happen.
Yeah.
So you just rattle off some of the awesome sponsors
this
you have.
This could not have been possible without the help of our partners. So we partner with Jackson Harbor, the Coast Guard, Taku Smokeries, Port Chocolate, Blue Evolution, which is like this cool like seafood brand that makes pasta, Holland America, Princess Cruises, Alaskan, Juno Empire, K2, Wells Fargo, Juno Food Tours, and First National Bank. For now, we're definitely going to probably have some more community partners coming on.
That sounds great. All right. Well, thank you for
all that you
and the crew at JEDC do for Juno. And you heard it here, Juno Maritime Fest. These tickets are on sale now.
Yeah, May 6th.
Okay. Not the tickets. The Maritime Fest is
free.
But the dinner beforehand is not.
May 5th.
And that's a finite amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. All right, thanks, Dana, for coming by. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. You can probably guess the bird making that familiar quacking. It's our most recognizable duck, the mallard. But did you know that only female mallards quack? In their breeding plumage, male mallards are avian dandies. They sport a metallic green head, lemon yellow bill, narrow white collar, and chestnut breast. Their back is pale gray, and their wings flash brilliant blue-violet feathers midway down the wing. If that isn't enough to lure female mallards, a charming curl adorns the male's central tail feathers, unlike any other bird in North America. Female mallards, on the other hand, are plumed in subdued mottled browns. The male's primary goal is to attract a mate and defend the breeding territory. The female's is to blend in with the natural surroundings while incubating the eggs and caring for the young. Fairly soon after the breeding season, say June or July, watch for the males to become quite drab. They're molting. Their old feathers are coming out while new ones grow in. Yet, despite any outward changes in plumage, the female's ability to quack loudly never diminishes during the year. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon, and we've got a party in the studio right now. We have Jeff Brown, who's at the board. We have Scott Burden. We have Annie Bartholomew. We have Matt Miller and Matt Miller's dog, Ruby. She's quiet now. So what are you guys all doing in the studio, and what's going on in the hall?
Okay, this is pretty exciting.
That was Ruby.
There's Ruby. This is the first annual Matt Miller Dog and Jog. It's part of our 2017 membership campaign. And we, you know, what else do you do when you need to raise money for public media? But you take your award-winning Morning Edition host, Matt Miller, and we have a jogathon inside KTOO that we're going to Facebook Live in about 30 minutes. No, about 20 minutes, right around 4 o'clock.
All right, this is what you do. Okay.
Better believe it.
It sounds great. So how does it work?
Well, from now until the jog and even after the jog, for every donation that comes in, Matt Miller is going to do a lap around KTOO and deliver dog treats to some of our favorite talent.
We got KTOO dog team!
We got Ruby, the red bone hound. We got Chica, the fox dog. We've got Cooper.
Tug, the news hound. We have quite a crew. It's going to be a thing to watch on Facebook Live.
So
KTOO's Facebook page.
Dog lovers, you've got to start donating some money now.
Yeah.
so we can see Matt. How many laps are you up for?
I don't know. I think I was at least 5, right?
I mean, they're coming in, and the more the better. And, you know, it's great because it will get Matt exercise, too, which he loves. And so you're getting Matt exercise, you're supporting public media, and you're feeding these dogs.
They're very cute.
And, Matt, very cute. I know you've been training for this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Working hard. He's got his sweats on, K3 shirt.
You should see. It's like a K3 branded party in here. We've got Annie's in her shirt. Matt's in his shirt.
I've never seen you on this side of the console. How's it feel to be over here?
This is a little weird. Yeah. It's kind of unusual.
Well, as the only volunteer in the room, it's really weird. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. So, okay, is there a minimum donation to make Matt run?
Not really. I think it's hard to. I think you have to give at least $5 when you go to ktoo.org.
Okay. But if you have a buck, you could just come by.
We'll take anything we can, Joan.
Okay, so let's talk before I let you go, and we talk to Nancy Ducherney about Arts Up. How important is this spring drive?
It's a big deal. You know, a third of everything that we do here is supported by our listeners. A third. That's a big part of our budget. You know, our listeners are the public in media, and we can't do this without them. So a big thank you to all the members who are already out there. Thank you so much. And I like to think that if there are people out there that haven't had a chance to become a member, now is a great time.
You might want to watch me.
You get to send Matt Miller on a lap.
It's kind of like a new twist on, like, the pie in the face or something like that.
It's public media style, though. Exercise, healthy choices,
and
feed the
dogs.
We all love dogs in public media.
You know, these dogs at K2, I'm sure they're very neglected. They need more training. All right, so Matt, any amount. If people are donating, yeah, you're doing the lap. What about Ruby's ready?
She's been ready for a while.
Ready to go. So there we go. All right. Well, thank you all for coming in, especially Ruby.
It just takes moments at ktoo.org.
Right, and you go live at 4:10, right?
Yeah, right around 4, a little after 4, and watch Matt run.
Okay. All right. Facebook, KTOO. Check
but
it out.
But we need... you know, memberships to make him run, so right, please go there now.
Ruby won't for anything, but Matt won't. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl, crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit, and you ain't no friend of mine. Well, they said you was high class. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit, and you ain't no friend.
Okay, it is 11 minutes to the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon coming live at you from Alaska's capital city and the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer. I am your Thursday host, Joan Pardis, Nancy DeCherney. We have to wade through some dogs to get into the studio.
We're going
to
embark on this, right?
That was
Jeff.
Embark.
I can't take that.
It was Jeff. To embark on our last section of Juno Afternoon, which is Art Hub.
Okay.
So what is going on?
We have a lot of things, of course. There's several things. You've already talked about To Kill a Mockingbird. So, and things are selling out. And I think it's
sold a great
out.
Show.
It's a wonderful show.
It's a great show.
And I suggest you go see it right away. So, I don't think we want to call that a painting party. It's a painting party. Tomorrow we have a secret garden painting party at 6 o'clock out at the Louise Miller Fine Arts Studio. There is an ACLU citizen activist training at Northern Light Church at 6:30.
That's free and open to the public, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There is a Coeur Alaska wine tasting over at the Jack. This is to benefit Relay for Life. At 7:30, we're celebrating the 150th anniversary.
Can you say it?
Sesquicentennial or whatever it is.
She's so good.
I don't know. Anyway, the other part I can't say. The accession part that we're a trio from Moscow is coming, and they're amazing. You should go on YouTube and look at them. The Moscow Knights Trio. They come with this balalaika thing that's like the size. It's huge. Just huge. And the Russian American colonies, it's a balalaika. It's a big stringed triangular thingamajiggy.
Oh, cool.
But anyway, wonderful music. And the Russian American colony singers will be here. And Hal Spackman will be narrating some of the history with interspersed with the music.
And when is this?
That's tomorrow night, Friday night at 7:30. It's over at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall. And it's a celebration and recognition of the 150th anniversary of our accession into the United States. So it's sort of a fun thing to do. And once in a while, I mean, you're probably not going to have another 150th anniversary to go to, right? So,
but you have the whole year to figure out how to say.
Yeah, it's all right. Saturday is April Fool's Day, so beware. I guess.
Oh, there's somebody in the studio who really likes April Fool's Day. Who could it be?
Things usually happen on April Fool's Day that are lots of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Let's see. So there is an AWARE advocacy training thing happening out at the Mendenhall Public Library at 10 in the morning until 6. At 11 a.m. to 12:30 over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. She has silly shorts, not so silent films. Sounds like a lot of fun going on over there. From 1 to 8:30 at Taku Lanes, it's the annual Big Brothers Big Sisters Bowl for Kids' Sake. That looks like a lot of fun, too. We have the Alumni Spring Auction and Banquet from 6 to 8 p.m. out at the Egan Library. And Taku Winds is offering a whimsical concert they're calling Musical Jokes. So, yeah, they figured they'd take advantage of the fact that they're performing on April Fool's Day. So that's over at the Jack at 7:30. On Sunday, we've got the yoga, we've got the ukulele jam, we got To Kill a Mockingbird at 4, the usual stuff on Sunday. But on Monday, Folk Festival begins. I hope that you have been resting up, because it's the annual marathon of music that they do at Centennial Hall and all over town. So that starts. You can get the schedule online. It was in the book, in the Empire, stuff like that. So get going. It's going to be a great week. There is a film. Nope, that's not happening. Never mind. But on Tuesday, we're having our wine tasting. It's a wonderful wine tasting. Over 40 different wines. They're also bringing a gin and a bourbon to taste. And it benefits the Jack. It is specialty imports, and they bring in people from the wineries to be there. Tom Loker and Wayne Norland will be performing. There'll be refreshments from the Breeze Inn. But it's an opportunity for you to sort of, like, you wanted to know what the difference between a Merlot and a Malbec is, you can try them because they're all going to be there. And it's great. It's
What's
great,
the name of that head?
It's called Clink.
Oh, yeah.
And
so, and that's a ticketed event, right?
It's a ticketed event. And also, there's going to be a wine auction with it. So if you taste a wine that you particularly like and you want to just take it home with you, we can make that happen. So you can bid on it right then and there.
What time is that? And how
it's
much?
From 5:30 to 7:30. If you come as a pair of people, it's $25 a person, so $50 for a couple. What I figure is it's from 5:30 to 7:30. You go have a little wine, and then you go right over to Folk Festival. It's a very pleasant evening all together.
So Nancy has mapped out the whole thing. You can get a little bite up there.
Do that thing. Yeah, so basically it's the whole week is dedicated to music and all that sort of stuff. But don't forget to go see the Mockingbird if you get a chance. Because, like I said, it is selling out. I don't remember what the last day is, do you?
They were just here. I think it was April 15th or 16th.
Yeah, so during Folk Festival, it might be a nice time for folks from out of town to get to see these things, sort of things. But
absolutely.
Basically, that's what's going on, is just music all over town. There's people have bars are having things. People are all over the place.
It's Folk Fest.
It's Folk Fest time.
It's Folk Fest. Yeah. It's a busy time.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thanks, Nancy, for coming in.
And we'll see you at the at the Moscow Trio and the Clink thing.
Absolutely. But be very careful on your way because, you know, Matt's running the halls.
I know. And aren't we looking for some donation people to
we
make
do
to members?
We do need donations.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I hope somebody was inspired to do that.
Yeah.
Right
because,
now.
You know, Matt's going to do laps and he's going to feed the dogs treats while he does
you
that.
Know, we're going to have pet days on Rock Around the Block in the summertime. The second Saturday or second Fridays all during the summer are going to be pet projects. And Gastineau Humane Society's bringing pets to Rock Around the Block. You ready?
Which is Rock Around the Block is the former Friday night.
Yeah. It's still
so
Friday night.
That's really
night.
Good because, you know, when you go to other places, they always have those adoption things and they have those cats and dogs right there. And you're like in New York City and you're like, how am I going to take this home with me?
Yeah. So anyway, it's good that the dogs are running laps. I like to see Matt getting his workout. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Thank you, Nancy. So it is 4 minutes to the hour. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. You can listen on it on demand. Listen at it. Listen to it anytime on demand at ktoo.org. And it is still 42 degrees at the International Airport. It's going to 40% precipitation tonight is expected. And then we're looking at actually 40% this evening, 100% tonight, and 100% chance of precipitation tomorrow. So tomorrow, tune in. Andy Klein will be the host tomorrow, and he has a great show, and it's always a party when Andy's the host. So thanks for listening. Have a great day.
KTOO's spring fundraiser is underway, and this year we're dedicated to giving back the airwaves. What does that mean? It means we're trying to keep these messages short to avoid any interruptions to our regular shows. Give now and help KTOO reach its goal of $160,000 before June 30th. Go to ktoo.org.